All right, everybody, welcome to my call with my good friend DJ. He is the Black Ops NLP trainer. And DJ, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Robert. Thanks.
Cool. I wanted to just take a minute to explain to the folks listening to this call how you and I met. I mean, we actually met at a local Dan Kennedy event, but what they don't know, they didn't know that, but additionally what most people don't know is I actually consulted with you when I was doing my sales video, and you gave me a lot of fantastic tips as it relates to influencing people, even when it's a one-way communication through video, and you're kind of my best-kept secret. And and the reason we're doing this call today is because we're going to kind of let some of the secrets out of the bag. Many people have heard of neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP, and you are the guy that I go to when I want help with that. And the reason you're here today is to share some super awesome top secret tips. Are you ready to do that?
Sure. Well, you know, there are things that we know, and things we know, we don't know. That's a quote from Donald Rumsfeld, and that's an example of how NLP can be used. He used that to diffuse a conversation that he was having with somebody that wanted to know about the weapons of mass destruction. He said that to the guy. The guy completely lost his train of thought, had nowhere to go with it. And I just wanted to start the conversation out with that so that I could get your attention.
Do you think that he was told to say that?
Yeah. I don't know if he was told to say this. Most of the politicians today are studying NLP. The politicians, the broadcasters, the religious leaders, all advertisers, virtually all advertisers. And it's included, bits and pieces of it are included in every sales training now that's come out since the 1980s.
You and I were jokingly talking about the fascination with Star Wars and that whole that scene where he's using, you know, the Jedi mind trick, and he says, "These are not the droids you're looking for." And I was joking with you about that, and you were saying, "Well, that's not really what you would say if you were going to actually use NLP in the same sense, right? These are not the droids you're looking for. It wouldn't work."
It's interesting because the idea of a Jedi mind trick is a lot of what NLP is about. But when you want to draw someone's attention to what you want them to pay attention to. So, for instance, if you say, "These are not the droids you're looking for," contained within that sentence is the phrase, "the droids you're looking for." Even though you're negating it, the unconscious mind just goes straight into that piece of it and just says, "the droids I'm looking for." So now my attention's been drawn to that. So they would have noticed the droids probably more than normal. And normal NLP pattern would have been something like, "These are just everyday random droids."
Right.
You know, we're just here with the everyday stuff. And then they would, you know, the people would be thinking, "Oh, this is just everyday stuff."
Right.
So you draw their attention away from it.
So you almost camouflage what it is with your words.
Right. That's why NLP is able to deliver so much information in a stealth fashion, because even though you're right there saying what it is you're saying, it's you're not saying what you don't want to say. So, so it's an interesting thing in that regard.
Well, and that's where it gets confusing for me, and that's why you've got this methodology that you teach, and we talked about it. It's called RAPP, right? R-A-P-P.
Right, R-A-P-P. This is for reconnaissance, and then analysis, power centers, and package delivery. And that's just the military phrasing for a process that I developed a while back. But we're using this as the black ops technique. So we might as well put it in those terms.
It is. So RAP is what you need to remember if you're listening to this call. And we're going to go through the rap process right now. Now, you're not actually going to go rap. It's like, this is not DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. This is our Black Ops NLP acronym. So remember rap, R-A-P-P. All right, so with that, maybe you can kind of tell us first of all, what is the big overall picture? What's the benefit of NLP? Why would people care about it? And I mean, you and I talked about you can use this in your everyday life. It's not just for influencing and getting money from people or anything. You can just use it all the time.
Well, right, but it's not what I was saying about it isn't that you can just use it all the time. What I'm saying is once you become proficient at this type of communication technique, that it just begins to influence and infiltrate your whole way of thinking. So learning these techniques can completely transform the way you communicate. And, yeah, it makes a really, really effective sales presentation. But we're always selling. We're selling with our kids, with our spouse, with our lovers, with our friends. You know, life is really about kind of about influence. If we want people around us to be happy, we influence them to be happy. But the focus of this really is about how to get into a situation where you're comfortable observing what's going on around you and utilizing the things that people are giving you in the communication so that you can deliver the package, so that you can go in there and make the changes that you want to make.
Well, and that brings us to the first letter in our acronym, because you're saying paying attention. And so our first letter R is for reconnaissance. And so what does reconnaissance mean in the world of Black Ops NLP? What are we looking for?
That's great, Robert. The only thing I want to do before we get into this, get started in this, is I want to talk about probably the key to neuro-linguistic programming. And one of them is outcomes, right?
Oh, that's right. I forgot we were talking about outcomes. Okay.
Right. So knowing your outcome is the key thing. Are you are you talking to someone because you want them to set an appointment with you? Are you talking with them so that you can help them in a particular area of their life? Are you or their business? Is there a product or a service that you want to you want to help them out with, or what do you want? So is your outcome to get a yes or a no? Or is your outcome to get are you just making a contact to be friendly, maybe a follow-up contact, and you just want them to have a good feeling about you when they get off the phone because they're already a loyal customer? So
what if it's a brand, like if I want my outcome to be that they I build trust and credibility because I'm new and I'm concerned, and so I really want to build trust and credibility. If that's the only outcome I want, then that's what I would focus on.
Sure. If your reason for making the contact is to build trust and credibility, then you need to know when you're done. So when you've accomplished that, that's when you get out of where you're at, or you stop that piece of it and you move into the next phase if that's what you're going to do. But you don't go in to build trust and credibility and then say, oh, and by the way, did you want a research report, or did you want some sort of you want me to look into what your business can do online? It's just going to be incongruent.
Right.
So one of the reasons to know your outcome is to know when you're done.
So in that case, that's a great point. So I might want to say, okay, my first phase or outcome that I want is to build trust and credibility. Once I've built trust and credibility, then I want to set an appointment to meet, right? So that'd be a logical second phase if that was my second outcome.
Yeah, it could be that that's what you're doing. But here's something interesting about what you're bringing up, because the whole first section of what we're covering here is about trust and credibility. It's about making your prospective customer comfortable with you, being a friendly in their territory. How do you feel in someone's territory?
Right. Okay, so that's a good point. So the reason I brought up trust and credibility, because that's two of the biggest things that I hear from a lot of my students and stuff. And what you're telling me is that the trust and credibility is built into the NLP process, right? You're teaching how to use very specific communication techniques, so that stuff just kind of happens, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. How to be like them so that they're unconsciously, they immediately trust you and become willing to listen to you and willing to participate in whatever it is that you got going on.
So does that work on Does that work on the phone as well as in person?
Oh, sure. There's clearly in communication, only a small portion of it is the words we use. It's said that the 7% of our communication is the words we use. About 60% of it is our body language, and then 38% or something like that is our tonality. So on the phone, we have the same kinds of things. But let me go down the list so we don't confuse anyone. And let's start first with the R in rap.
Okay.
This is the first thing. The first thing is to remember that the show is out there. Whatever's going on when you're in an influencing situation is going on with the other person that you're trying to influence. As soon as we start to think about ourselves, like how am I doing, and then maybe we get nervous or self-conscious or something like that, as soon as we start to do that, we start to narrow our focus a little bit, and we actually have physiological signs from that, our foveal vision, which is what they call the focused vision, gets stronger and the peripheral vision gets weaker. There are other things like our mouth can get dry. We stop smiling. You know, there's a variety of things.
So if you get nervous, you get kind of that tunnel vision, dry mouth, whatever.
Yeah, those are just some symptoms of it so that you can be aware when you're doing it. And there's some great techniques for making sure that you overcome that if it does happen, or preparing yourself in advance so that that doesn't ever occur during the conversation. And this is the sensory acuity part. This is about how to stay focused on who you're talking to. So it's very important, because nobody wants someone to come into a sales situation, have the salesman not pay attention to them and just run off with some sort of a sales pitch. Nothing puts people off faster than that.
So
even if you're not...
I was just going to say, so not listening and kind of just running, you know, blurting out whatever you want to talk about, like pay-per-click advertising or whatever your agenda is, right?
Right. So even somebody that wants to buy a particular thing doesn't want to buy it from someone that doesn't care about them or doesn't listen to them or doesn't, you know, connect with them in any way. So it's critical to get that connection with someone and know what it is that you're doing so that you can move them through the process. I live by the motto that people want to be led.
So on the reconnaissance side, what kind of things are we looking for? So obviously what I heard you saying is we need to be open. So not thinking internally like, gee, I'm really nervous. I wonder if this guy noticed that I'm sweating. You can't be doing that. You need to be thinking externally, like, I wonder what they're concerned about. Oh, he just said something that might be useful later. I better write that down. But you have to pay attention is basically what you're saying.
Well, yeah, pay attention. And here's one little example of a way to do that. If you notice that you're focused internally or you're running some internal dialogue, or this is always a good idea to do before you make the phone call so that you set yourself up to be to have high sensory acuity and to be open. And that's to use what is known as the 5 points of focus. So you focus first on whatever is visually straight ahead of you, and then maybe go beyond that a little bit so that you're not actually focused on the object, but you're focused a little past that object. And then on your peripheral vision, side to side, you focus on the furthest out point. When someone wants to check that, they can just put their hand out and see when it starts to come into their visual field. Peripheral field is primarily about movement and not so much about focus on something. But if you move your fingers off to the side, then you know you're doing that. And then up above and below, you can focus on those two things. And what this is doing is opening up your visual field. When your visual field is opened up, then all of your senses become open, because this is a kind of operates on the primal brain, that reptilian brain level. When we start to take in all of the information from our surroundings, then it kind of alerts us, and all of our senses open up. So we can hear more clearly, we'll be focused on what we're hearing as well as focused on what we're seeing and that sort of stuff, so we don't miss any of the stuff that goes by.
This made me think of something like when I was in high school and I didn't like what the teacher was saying, I would always look down at my paper and doodle, right?
So no, yeah,
basically closing them off, right?
Exactly. It's a way of shutting them down, right? Shutting it off.
So the opposite is looking up and opening up your vision. Cool.
Right. Now, the next piece of it is the analysis. So sure, we have to pay attention. We want to stay focused on the other person. But what is the other person doing? And so if we look at this as in the stealth way, then we want to look at how's the other person dressed. You know, what's their culture like? What are their habits like? But on a phone in the sales environment, we're not so very different than that. It's not like we're in Afghanistan trying to blend in with the tribal leaders or something. But that doesn't mean that this isn't really valuable. It is really valuable because everyone comes from some different cultural background. They come from a different way of thinking. And when you communicate with them in a way that isn't their style, they have to translate whatever you're saying into their style before they can really take it in and understand it. So if you give it to them in the way that they're used to using it, they don't have to do that. It's already that way.
So how do you do that? I don't understand. So we're paying attention, but we have to communicate in their style.
Right.
Tie those two things together for me.
Well, okay. So the first bit of the analysis is going to be what's their body doing? So you can tell what's happening with someone's body by listening to their voice. You can tell if they're, you know, looking at the floor or, like you were talking about, doodling, you know, staring at a small thing. Or you can tell if they're sitting upright, if they're paying attention, if they're whatever's going on with them. And the reason that this is important, like I said, is so you don't run over the top of them or so you're not less energetic than them. And people don't want to talk to someone that's less energetic than them. They want to talk to someone with the same kind of energy level that they've got, that sort of thing. So if someone's speaking really fast and you call them and you say, Mr. McKenzie, this is Dwayne calling. But they're going like this and they're moving through their stuff and they got their day moving and all kinds of things are happening in their life and their brains are kicking in like that. They don't want to slow down for you. They want to go. Because they're already moving fast. So paying attention to how fast they're talking, paying attention to what's going on with their voice and things like that is going to be crucial. If they're not already happy and somebody just comes in and they're just all bubbly and effervescent with happiness, probably not going to connect with them. So I'm not saying that you should call people up and if they sound depressed that you should get depressed. I'm not saying that. But for a moment, match what they're doing. And then lead them out of that, lead them into the kind of state of mind you want them to be in. And if you're paying attention, you'll know, first of all, what their state was originally, or approximated, and then you'll know when you've accomplished moving them out. Now, you don't stop talking to them until you change their state of mind, but as you're speaking with them, you move them into a better state of mind. You move them into a more open state and that sort of thing, because you're already in an open state. You've done the acuity exercises. Your mind's open. Your senses are open. You want their senses to be open. You want their mind to be open because you're going to put some stuff in there that you want them to be happy about. So we've got their voice tone, and then we've also got the modality that they speak in. Now, modality is like, are they visual? Or are they auditory? Do they communicate primarily about the way things sound? Or are they kinesthetic, which is the way things feel? So if someone's talking about, they're saying, well, look at this. And I don't see what you're talking about, or I can see how that would be helpful. Then you know that they're talking primarily in a visual way. About 60% of the people communicate visually, so it's fairly common. But if you're using those kinds of words to somebody that's in a feeling mode, if they're saying, well, I just don't get it. I haven't gotten a grip to that, on that. That seems to escape me. Those things are, are kinesthetic. Those are about feeling things. And if you're talking about, you're trying to show them something, you're telling them how things look, they have to translate that into the way they're already thinking. And that's extra work for them. They're burning up extra brain chemicals trying to communicate with you. So you want
that kind of, does that kind of go back to, like, you know, when you just meet somebody and you, like, it just seems like everything goes smoothly? Is it really subconsciously you're communicating on that same, like, you're both visual communicators, and so you automatically just jive, and you're like, I don't know why, but so-and-so and I just get along well. Right.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. I can't say that every romantic relationship starts out because people are all visual, but it makes a big difference in what your processing has to be in order to communicate with someone. And if they're like us, we tend to like them. So
yeah.
When we meet someone that's like us, we tend to reciprocate by liking them. And that way we kind of stay safe. It's a kind of a safety thing. And I view the world as though everybody was still in a primitive state on some level. And we're kind of, do we go into flight or flight, or do we feel safe, or, you know, how are we handling our world? And if you trigger the things in someone that helps them to feel safe, that's the first whole piece of it is, and then you can know what those things are by paying attention, and by paying attention to these things in particular. Can you sense what their posture is? What kind of tone of voice are they using? What kind of rate of speech are they using? What sort of modality are they communicating in? What's their communication style? So it's a great thing to do. The reason that we're doing this is to make things effortless for ourselves, because we've got a map to this. We've got an instruction book on how to do it. And this works for virtually everyone, this process. Anyone can go in and match someone else's style. In NLP, we call this pacing. And you pace a little bit before you lead, and the advantage to pacing is that you win them over. And once you've won them over, then there's a couple more steps that we go through. And if they're open to the possibility of being interested in buying, you've probably got them. So,
so you mentioned in these communication types, you mentioned visual and then kinesthetic, or how people feel. Well, the other one was auditory. What are words people use for if they prefer to communicate that way?
Oh, auditory. I hear you. Yeah. So it sounds to me like you're asking about the auditory communication style. And things can be clear as a bell. That's auditory. There's just a bunch of them. We're talking about putting on the training, and we're going to cover a lot of this stuff in that, right? Yeah.
Right, of course. But those are, if they are using, like, the words you just used, I hear what you're saying. It sounds to me like you're talking about X, whatever. It's the language they use kind of gives it away, which I thought was pretty cool. I'd never heard that before, so.
Right, yeah. So I see what you're saying. I hear you. That this feels right. Those are visual, and then auditory, and then kinesthetic ways of communicating. And interestingly enough, this isn't really something that we've got going on, but if you're ever giving a presentation and you want to ramp up the energy in the room, you start with a kinesthetic, and then you move into an auditory, and then you go visual, and that brings people up in their, like, in their energy level. It's an interesting thing. And most of the time, people that are using a kinesthetic representational system, people that are primarily in that mode, they speak slowly. And it's kind of slower, more deliberate. A lot of times their tonality is really low. People who are auditory, their speed isn't what sticks out. A lot of times they speak really loudly, or they're kind of monotone, or they have a really sing-song voice, but there's something about their voice that stands out. And then the visuals tend to just go really super fast. And everything that they're talking about is talking about really fast because they're making pictures just like almost like running a movie in their head, and they're trying to keep their speech up with this, with how fast their brains are delivering them information. So it's just a little side thing. It was, but it is one way of yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? So if you're ever in a group of people and you want to bump the energy level up, you can just say, oh, I feel like we should do something different. Let's talk about what the possibilities are. Let's see what we can get done. You know, that sort of thing.
Nice.
Right.
So yeah. we're on analysis still with this piece. Are there other things we need to cover in analysis?
No, it's pretty much going to be the types of analysis that that we're going to look at for now. And the next thing is the power centers. What are their power centers, or what are the actual targets? So when we think about neurology, when you think about a person's brain, the way it functions, there are clusters of neurons that where everything that they think kind of goes through certain particular centers, and we want to locate those. There are ways that we can locate those. Now, for our purposes, it's not just everything, you know, but it is things about, like, their needs, their wants, and their desires, and I separate those things out a little bit. A lot of people lump them all together. They'd say, well, something that they want is a desire. Well, yeah, okay, it is a desire technically, but what's their heart's, their deepest desires? Like, what's their real hot buttons? A guy buying a car, he may want something that's safe for his family, but his hot button is he wants something that's really super sexy. You want something that's going to go fast, maybe. You know, maybe that's the thing that's really going to push his buttons, you know, is speed. Now, he wants something safe for his family, but his hot button is speed, maybe. I'm just using that as an example. So, right. And it could be the same thing. In this. So what we're looking at here is what are the person's needs? And this kind of has to do with what their resources are, what's their level of need. You know, do they need to pay their bills, or do they need to hire more people because their business is doing well, that sort of thing. If you can figure out where they're at on that, there's a couple of things. First of all, you can eliminate people that, you know, aren't anywhere near where you need them to be. But the other thing is it gives you kind of a baseline for where someone's needs are, and what you're paying attention to here is the words they use. So if they say they need to hire people, then you remember that. If they say they need more staff, you remember that they need more staff. If you're telling somebody that needs more staff that they're going to hire people, it's not going to sound right to them. There's just two different ways of thinking. It's two different kinds of, like, corporate cultures, maybe, but these probably aren't corporations. Nevertheless, they've got that kind of background. They're coming from either a place where they need to hire people or they need to increase their staff. And if they say increase their staff, use that term. Don't use hire people. Just go with exactly what they say. And on the level of wants, wants are important. And what people want money for or what they want to increase their sales for is different with everybody. One person wants to increase sales so that they can, so their wife won't leave them, say, for instance, you know. Another person may want to increase sales. I'm just saying, it's real. This is a real thing in the world. Another person may want to increase sales so that they can take a vacation or, you know, pay off their something so they can buy a cabin or something like that. You know, they want to buy a boat. Maybe in today's economy, people think, well, no one's buying boats, but there are people buying boats. And if that's what the person wants, you need to know that. Or if they want to pay their boat off, that's another
right.
thing. So the more information you've got about where they're at, the more you'll be able to use, and these are the actual targets that you're going to use later in the sales process when it comes time to deliver the package. You're going to go right back into what these target pieces are, and you're going to use those. And then there's their desires, their hot buttons, like we were talking about before. What is it that they really want out of life? You know, do they really want a happy family, or do they really want to be famous? Maybe they want to be have the most popular pizza parlor in town. You know, maybe that's kind of where they're at. Or maybe they want to own the biggest pizza chain in the country. Maybe they want to be Ray Kroc. I don't know. But but whatever it is, if you know that, you're well on your way. But a lot of people, when they get into a situation like this, in fact, most people, they're thinking about most people that are doing sales, small business people that are making sales, they're thinking more about their business and the sale that they need to make. And they're not thinking about the other person and what's important to them, what they want to get out of life. So when we consider what the other person wants to get out of life and we attach our product or service to that, what their desires really are, then what they desire is whatever we've got. So,
yeah, so what I hear you saying is that so we do this reconnaissance, and then we kind of figure out how they communicate, and we figure out kind of what their hidden desire is. Like, I want to get more customers because really I want to pay off my boat, and then you correlate your solution to them paying off their boat. But the mistake that we make most often, I'm certainly guilty of this, you go into a situation where you're talking to somebody, and that somebody might be a potential candidate to, you know, buy a new website from you or whatever. And you start thinking about, well, I think I'll get Joe to do the job, and if we can get him to do it for only $200, then I can make this much more money. And you're going internal, and you're thinking about your issues. Or, man, I really need to close this deal so that I can pay my bills next week. If you do that, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure. You have to be open, communicate with the person, help them get what they want via your product or service, you know, using your product or service, and then you'll ultimately get what you want. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. And what these are, these things that they say, the actual structure of what they tell you, is what becomes the target when you get into the sales mode, when you get into where you're actually talking to them about the benefits of your product. The benefits of your product are whatever their wants, needs, and desires are.
So that's our last step, which is the last P in wrap. It's the package delivery. So the package delivery represents that stuff.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a transition that we use also, though.
Okay.
So, so there's a little transitional piece that comes in between the first three, the RAP. Then before the package delivery, we want to get them in touch with a little bit of a contrast. We want to find out from them, or get their mind thinking, first of all, what it will be like for them if they don't do what we're talking about. There's some great techniques for doing this. By the way, each of these steps has got its own language patterns. Each of these steps has got its own way of wording things and phrasing things so that it's done smoothly and so that it gets the exact type of information that you want. Now, for this piece, this transitional piece, which is the contrast frame, so we're framing it now as a contrast to saying, well, what's it going to be like if all of your competitors are online and getting the business of people that can afford to buy computers and cell phones, and you're not? How is that going to, you know, what's that going to cause your business to do? Now, they immediately know that that's going to cause their business to not perform very well. But at any rate, the reason that we do that is because we're just about to bump them up and to tell them how good things are going to be when they do follow through. And this is a little bit of a contrast. They see the worst that it could get, and now we're going to tell them the best that it could be. Now we're going to go into delivering the package.
So we have, before we kind of say, here's what I got that'll fix all your problems, we kind of need to say, here's what's going to happen if you fail to address this.
Yeah, how bad could your problems get?
Yeah. So if you continue to eat steak and smoke cigarettes, you're going to die.
Well, okay, if we're selling them a gym membership, maybe.
we could be doing that. But if you stop smoking and buy my website stuff, you'll live longer. No, but your point is that it needs to be the topic, the negative topic needs to be in line with whatever you're offering, right? So you use the example of all your competitors have websites and they're doing great. How come, you know, you're not doing that? Or here's what's going to happen if you don't do that.
Right. And so their pains, whatever their pains are, and you don't even actually have to know the pains. Here's the thing. All you really have to say is what will happen if you don't, whatever it is that you're selling them. Like if it's a gym membership, what will happen to you if you don't take advantage of this, if you just continue to sit around and watch TV every night and eat bonbons or whatever. I don't think anyone's eating bonbons anymore, but smoking and eating steak. Or what will happen to your company if all your competitors go online and you don't? So those things, and then you can even extend it out. I mean, there's ways to get this to a bigger extreme. And a lot of times when I'm doing a sales process, I'll actually ask them, well, what's it going to be like in a month? It might not be much different, right? But what's going to happen a year from now if you haven't taken advantage of this? And 5 years from now when, for instance, when they stop publishing phone books, how's anybody going to find your company? Well, it's expensive to publish phone books. What if people had to buy their phone books? And you know that's coming, right? I mean, they sell the advertising, but eventually they're going to charge people to buy it, or else they're just going to continue to sell that advertising to people that don't know anything about their customers, because no one – who even uses a phone book anymore?
Right.
Anyway, yeah, personally. And I certainly don't carry one with me in the car when I've got my – my Android.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you're basically telling a true story about yourself, but the reality is that's the situation for many businesses, and they're not looking at it. They're just continuing to do what they've done. That definition of insanity thing.
Right. And if I want ravioli, and I'm looking at Italian restaurants, I'm not just looking at Italian restaurants because I don't think all Italian restaurants make your ravioli. So I'm going to actually go and look online at their and see if they make ravioli. This is one of the things about using online services, and it doesn't really have anything to do with this with the wrap process that we're talking about, but it might have to do with what your customers are going through right now, what the people that are on the phone are thinking about how they're going to get in touch with you. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to now go into associating the product with their desire. Say their big desire is to send their kids to college. Well, we don't just say what's going to happen to your company, but what if in 5 years you can no longer afford the tuition to send your kid to school? So we actually go into where they're at. If we know what they want out of life, we can go right in there. And we can say, wouldn't you like it to be easy to afford the college tuition? What if you could send your kid to college without any student loans or scholarships or grants or anything? So these things are important because it gets them to start to imagine for themselves what it will be like once they've done what you want them to do. And this is a great way of just planting these ideas in the future and having them consider what it's going to be like to follow through with what you want them to do. So you find out what their reasons are for doing it, and then you future-pace them a little bit into what it's going to be like for them once their desires are fulfilled. And, of course, right now you stand between them and their desires being fulfilled. Only way they can get from you to where their desires are fulfilled is by purchasing something from you, which is, in this case, is online advertising, which is, what a great investment. Anybody that's in a business right now and doesn't have this, I don't know what they're thinking. Anyway, you fire for effect. This is another military term, fire for effect. Yeah. So if I can show you a way to increase your business by 20% every 3 months over the next 5 years, is there any reason why you wouldn't want to do that? So you're going to fire for effect. You're going to test fire. You're not actually closing. You're just saying, hey, if I were to close you right now, is there any reason that you would object? And this is a way you gather more information here, because now you're going in and you're getting any potential of objections from them. There's really only 4 objections, but that's beside the point. You're just going to ask them, what objections would you have? And if they say, I can't afford it, well, obviously you can't afford not to. I mean, other people are just way ahead of you on this. They're going to leave you behind. If they say they don't have time, well, the whole advantage to this is that it's going to give them more time. So, at any rate, you find out whatever their objections are. They don't think it applies to them. Clearly, there's plenty of examples of how it does. If they think that they don't believe you, you know, you've clearly got examples of your work or other people's work that you can go and refer to. And that's how it all works. This is the basic thing. And in here, we're going to use 3 main keys. We're going to use hypnotic language, which is sometimes done to make your suggestions easier for them to take in. People sometimes tend to resist certain things. So there's some clear languaging patterns that can be used so that you avoid people resisting it. Some people are able to take in a sales message and not have any resistance at all. Some people are able to deliver a sales message in such a nice, friendly way without any pressure that the other person just wants to agree. And that's what we're going to learn. We're going to study those things. And then we're going to also study command tonality. So this is a way, rather than to follow their tonality, we're going to study how to change your tonality so that you become the one that is in charge of the conversation. And there are specific ways to do that. There's some really specific ways to turn a conversation from one of questioning or just casual conversation into one where now I'm telling you what to do. And when you listen to the call and the calls that are going to follow this, you're going to come away with huge power in the way you communicate. No doubt about it. Then there's tag questions. And tag questions are a really great way to get information in without it being like in their face. It's like loading your information in the trunk of a car and driving it through. I mean, you go and you say hi to them. This is this is another little stealth technique, isn't it? You just use a tag question. You just say, I got some great techniques for getting a sales message across to people and without them even knowing. Sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? And, of course, it sounds like a good idea. And people generally want to agree. When you make a statement and then you ask them for agreement or you reinforce it in some way with a little tag question, and sometimes the tag questions can come beforehand. Don't you know there's a lot of ways that we can do it, but the way I'm going to teach you is simple, isn't it? So that was a tag question before and after the statement.
So what parts make that a tag question? Break that down for me a little bit, that last one that you did.
Well, I said, don't you know, that's a tag question. It came before the question. Don't you know there are a lot of ways of getting your information in, but I'm going to teach you a way. And when you say but, you kind of negate what happened ahead of it. So forget about there having been a lot of ways. But I'm going to teach you a way to do it easily and skillfully. I don't remember exactly what that statement was that I used, but that sounds like a good idea, doesn't it? So now what I'm doing is saying, of course it sounds like a good idea. You want to get it through easily and skillfully. I know you agree with that. I don't have to guess at that. But then I say, doesn't it? And that just reinforces the whole idea that what I'm bringing to you is something that you agree with, because I've used a second question with the whole process. A tag question doesn't have to be a second question. It can be just any question, can it? There's just any number of ways of doing these things.
And so when you get good at doing that, you become good at, along with these other topics, you kind of influence the way someone is thinking and perceiving what you're offering by getting them to kind of subconsciously agree with little statements.
Right. There are certain principles of influence that come into play here. There's a consistency principle where people want to be consistent with who they said they were a few minutes ago. So if a few minutes ago they said that they wanted to increase their business, and you said well, people are finding that that their business is increasing when they get online advertising, and so that's something you might want to look into, isn't it? Now, yeah, they just said they wanted to increase their business. You just gave them an example of how others are increasing their business by using this service, and then you asked them if they wanted to look in, if they wanted to look into it. And of course they want to look into it, because they just told you that they needed to do that, even though they may not have told you anything at all. This might all be stuff that you told them. But you're saying it in a way that is giving examples of other people doing it. This is hypnotic language that I'm talking about. So this is not all tag questions. So this is a number of things that I'm throwing into this. And that's the way communication is done. So neurolinguistic programming was modeled off of highly, highly successful people that were doing things that was getting great results. It's not stuff that was created out of thin air, but most people that were getting excellent results, they get two students at Harvard. One comes off like gangbusters, able to change their life and do all kinds of great things. Another one kind of struggles, and it doesn't necessarily matter what grades they got. What matters is how they learn to implement the kinds of things that they've learned. But the ones that are really good implementers aren't typically teaching what they're doing. They're so busy doing it that they don't teach it. So what the founders of NLP did is they went in and studied these people, and they took notes, and they interviewed them, and they videotaped them at the time. It was only videotape, but anyway. So they videotaped them, and they reviewed those things, and they wrote down every word they said. They transcribed it, and they went over the language patterns, and then they interviewed the people that they were talking to. Like, they might interview the person that was buying, and they said, well, what was most important about this? Or when they said this, what happened to you? And they really, really picked the whole thing apart and broke it all down, and that's what they came up with a trail of techniques out of that. And that trail of techniques is what we're teaching here. This is the best stuff that they got from doing the modeling that they did. And the modeling is still going on today, and there's still new work being done in this field. But what we've got now for things like this is way, way more than what we had, 20 years ago. And still, for whatever reason, people don't know it.
Well, what's interesting about it is that if you were just going to label it generically, you'd call it, mastering communications, right? And I can't remember what book it was. We were talking about this other day, and I still need to find it. But it was in this book. It stated that if and when you master communications, you will be able to achieve things that only masters of communications can. And a great example of people who master communications are some of the most powerful, most wealthy, most sought-after people in the world. They're actors, they're politicians. Those people are master communicators, comedians, for example.
Right.
And so you don't necessarily have to achieve that level of mastery in communication, but even just improving in the slightest bit will improve your life dramatically.
Why not continue to master your communication skills all throughout your life? And why not have some of the best tools available? And yes, you're absolutely right. In a generic way, a lot of what I'm going over can just be called communication skills, but I'm actually tailoring this and gearing this towards being able to sell without feeling like you're selling, without the person that's buying feeling like they're buying. This is just a way to take the rough edges off the communication so that everything goes down smooth, and it just works out. You know, speaking though of powerful people and learning their communication skills, one of the guys that I've been studying with, Evan Pagan, was outlining five different techniques for things that he had noticed that all wealthy people have in common, and all five of them were communication skills. You know, there were things like, you know, public speaking, learning as much as you can about language, and, you know, things like that. They weren't this kind of honed down specifically for a sales meeting, but they were about, or a sales call, rather, but they were about, you know, all about communication. It was all about learning how to communicate. And if all of the wealthy, powerful people in the world right now are master communicators, then we've got something that we can work with.
Yeah. And so it would be a good idea to be a master communicator, wouldn't it?
Well, if you became a master communicator, and through your studies, one of the things that you worked on was this, and this actually, the things that we're talking about right here, are the core pieces in that master communication has, at least that this phase of it has. Obviously, it's not all about the history of language and things like that, but you don't need to know the history of language if you know how to communicate to the person you're trying to communicate with, and that's what this is about. This is about the direct piece when you're on the phone with the person or when you're face-to-face with the person, how to take what they're saying and where they're at and put what you're doing right in there and show them how well it matches up with what they've got. Everybody's got dreams. You know, but you brought up an interesting point, and it reminded me of the first sales processes, the first influence processes that were developed by the founder of NLP, one of the founders of developed a process called persuasion engineering. And their first run of the product, they produced 5,000 of them. And those first 5,000 were bought all in one purchase by one company. So it's kind of interesting. People do know that this works. They do know the value of it. They do know the power behind it. Of course, that one company, this is really interesting, was Oral Roberts University. So it was a Christian religious organization that bought all of the persuasion books. And, you know, they didn't do it to keep it out of the hands of other people. They did it because they were going to teach it.
Right.
So, yeah. So this is, you know, the people that know about communication and its importance and the people that know about NLP they're studying it. They're getting it together. It's huge in Europe. It's just, there's a variety of reasons why it didn't take off in the U.S. the way it did in England and the rest of Europe, but it's all throughout the world.
Yeah, it's everywhere, and it's in your daily lives, and you use it whether you know it or not. You just don't. How cool would it be? I mean, we were talking about this too. How cool would it be to use it with purpose and be able to? You said something I thought was pretty powerful. You could use it for, you know, better relationships with your, you know, wife, girlfriend, family members, boss.
Sure.
You can use it for negotiating new salary. You can use it for buying a car. You can use it for anything.
That's exactly right. And how great would it be if every time you saw your wife, she fell more and more in love with you? You know, I mean, a lot of people don't have that kind of conscious awareness of what they're doing, so it's kind of haphazard. They throw words around, they throw sentences around and ideas around without any awareness of the consequences of what's going on. And this is one way to start to become aware of it and to start to master some aspects of it to make life much better. What if your boss admired you more every time he saw you? What if you did that? So here's a situation. My daughter had a job as a waitress, and she didn't think her boss liked her very much. And I said, "Well, what is your boss like?" She says, "Well, he's got this dog. He loves the dog." And I said, "Well, cool. Talk to him about dogs every time you see him. Every time you see him, ask him about his dog, and tell him a story about dogs or say something about dogs. But she started doing that. And the next thing you know, she was getting on the schedule all the time. I don't know if you know about restaurants, but what they do and help like somebody is they start to give them less days.
Right.
Anyway, all of a sudden she had a full schedule. She started doing this, and a couple weeks later, boom, her schedule's full, and she's got, you know, so she's got the best stations in the place and stuff like this. And that's because she was doing exactly what I'm talking about. She knew what the targets were with him, and she associated herself with those things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I've unconsciously done that before just when meeting with people. If you ever meet in somebody else's office and you see that they've got, like, a Green Bay Packers jersey on the wall or something like that, you start talking to them about the Green Bay Packers, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's this great story about the Blue Marlin. Because there was a sales training that was given where they were talking about, well, if you go into a place and there's a Blue Marlin on the wall, talk to them about the Blue Marlin. And somehow it got disconnected, and the next guy took over the training, and he said, always talk to them about the Blue Marlin. And it was some company that every time they went in there, their salespeople were taught to talk to the people about a Blue Marlin.
What's up, fish?
Yeah. And nobody actually has a Blue Marlin anymore on their wall, so it was, I mean, not nobody. Clearly, there are people that have that. If I lived on the coast, I might too. But yeah, that's kind of funny. So it doesn't help to talk to somebody about some fantastic thing if that person doesn't relate to it.
Right.
You definitely have to relate to whatever, you know, if it's Green Bay Packers, definitely talk to them about some cheese, you know.
Yeah. Well, with that, I think I'm going to we'll end this call and invite, send out an open invite to everybody listening to somewhere on this page. There should be information about how you can sign up for our full-day training. It's about 4 hours in length. Be a schedule published when you sign up. It's completely free. You don't have to do anything. DJ is going to unlock all this stuff for you and share some, I think you said you have some worksheets and stuff that we'll have posted for this free training. But here's the thing. If you want to be able to download the training and have it and keep it, we're asking that you're going to pay for that because it's going to cost us to produce it and stuff. If you just want to listen in on the calls live, it's no cost. You're more than welcome to do that. If you later change your mind and decide that you want to buy the stuff afterwards, it's going to be a slightly higher price. Now, all that information is on the sign-up sheet, which you can find here on the page. But either way, regardless of which direction you go, I guarantee that you will find value in this because as you become a master communicator and after you've listened to this stuff, you will be better off. Don't you think?
Well, there's clearly things that people want in life, and the way to it is through communication.
Yep, absolutely. All right, well, with that, I'll let you go, and then we'll see everybody on our call coming shortly. Thanks for your time, DJ.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Robert. I'll talk to you soon.